Welcome to Policy Patrol with the Illinois Chiefs. Today is Friday, June 10th, and I'm Chiefs Communications Director Amy Rourke Jones. Today we are bringing you something a little different. I'm excited to share that we are welcoming for the first time ever some special guests from outside the association. Our guests today join us from an initiative known as United to Safeguard America from Illegal Trade, also called USAIT. This is a public education campaign with a mission to combat black market trade. USAIT is backed by a coalition of national and state brand enforcement experts, law enforcement agencies, and leading business organizations. The initiative provides information and training. Through its educational efforts, USAIT supports local officials, law enforcement, and thought leaders as they work to tackle illegal trade. USAIT also raises public awareness of the depth of the problem, as well as the severe consequences that are inflicted on states and municipalities by black market profiteers. The Illinois Chiefs are proud to be one of the 18 partners who have joined forces with USAIT to combat illegal trade. Joining us on today's program are Matt Albans, USAIT spokesperson and former acting director of U.S. Immigration and Custom Enforcement, or ICE, and Kristen Reif, who is director of external affairs for Philip Morris International. Welcome to the program today. Thank you for joining us. To start off, I would love to hear from each of you a little background about your experience working to fight illegal trade and how you got involved with the USAIT initiative.
Okay. Thanks. So I spent 26 years in federal law enforcement. The majority of my time was with DHS within U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And obviously with immigration and the Southwest border being one of the challenges that we all face right now as a society, the C part of immigration and customs enforcement sometimes gets pushed to the side or lost in the shuffle. But in reality, ICE, through its Homeland Security investigations, is the primary federal entity with responsibility for the investigation, enforcement, and prosecution of crimes relating to illicit trade. So whether it's narcotics trafficking or human trafficking or counterfeiting or intellectual property rights, all those crimes fall underneath customs violations, and which is why ICE is the primary federal agency with that. So I have a long history, obviously, of working with the agency and having experience in working and overseeing some of these crimes, and have seen the really damaging impact that it has to society, both in terms of the loss of revenue, but you also talk about true victimization, individuals that are suffering at the hands of illicit trade, and whether it's through counterfeit pharmaceuticals or whether it's through narcotics. I mean, and we can get more into this certainly, obviously, but you look at what's going on with fentanyl in our society right now and the challenges that that's creating. All of these things are all tied in through illicit trade, because the same criminal organizations that are trafficking in counterfeit goods or in illicit tobacco are also trafficking in human beings and in narcotics and in weapons. And so when you attack one part of this, you're attacking the entire organization, which is why it's so critical. And for a career law enforcement guy like myself, be able to keep my at least one toe dipped in the law enforcement pool and work with a great organization like USAIT, it's been a real blessing, and I'm very thankful for having the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, and Matt, we're so happy to work with you. So thanks for your service, and for everybody who's going to be listening to this podcast. Thanks for all you do to protect and defend and keep everybody safe. I didn't wear the badge like Matt, have so much respect for it, but I've gotten this unique opportunity by working for Philip Morris International to be able to really lead up our brand integrity division. We call it illicit trade prevention because we think it goes beyond just counterfeiting and a lot of the problems being with smuggling and tax evasion, under declaration, kind of problems that are a little bit harder to explain and maybe not so clear cut at times. And so that's really how I got into this at the beginning. It was really through Philip Morris International and our dedication to fighting cigarette smuggling, counterfeiting of tobacco products. But it didn't take long to realize that it's not an isolated incident. It's not a criminal activity that is siloed from other criminal activities. This is but one source of revenue for bad guys, and they know that it is really low risk, I'd say, because not a lot of folks have been looking at it up until recently. And it's incredibly high reward because of the profits these guys can make off of this kind of activity. So that's really how we got into it through our own business perspective. But again, it's not just about tobacco products. It's about the network that is trafficking in these products. It's about everything else they traffic, like Matt said, whether it's drugs like fentanyl, whether it's guns, whether it is human beings, unfortunately, across not just the Southwest border, but the northern border as well. I'm from upstate New York, and I've seen issues like that just as much as you see in the Southwest, but maybe don't get publicized so much. So we were happy to try to bring together lots of industries, whether it's the tobacco industry, which we represent, or frankly, we work with the pharmaceutical industry, the apparel and footwear folks, who they see this quite a bit, bring this network together to fight the network of bad guys. And that's really how this effort got started.
And you both spoke a little bit about this, but if you could talk a little more about personally, like what you have seen through this work and what really motivates you and makes you passionate about this type of work.
Yeah, maybe I'll start and then hand it over to Matt. So personally, I'm incredibly motivated to work on this issue because I feel like this is our chance to make a positive contribution to our communities, to society, to law enforcement. This is an issue that, as I was mentioning before, goes way beyond just one product or one industry. And so bringing everyone together to work on this is an incredibly motivating effort. And how really how USAIT, United to Safeguard America from Illegal Trade, got started, its origins are really at the beginning of the pandemic. We were with the Department of Homeland Security. We were hearing about some of the threats that bad guys were really evolving their operations into. And bad guys were doing what they do best. They were trying to stay ahead of the game and take advantage of people and situations at their low moment. And so they were counterfeiting N95 masks. They were smuggling in products that were scarce, like hand sanitizer and wipes and every cleaning product that people were at home on their laptops looking for. And criminals tried to fill that void with substandard products, products that could put people's health and safety at risk. And so in our discussions with DHS, we were asking, you know, what can we do as the private sector? We feel a little bit helpless. And they told us, look, do what you do best. You guys chase bad guys who are counterfeiting cigarettes and who are trafficking in illegal products. Well, bad guys are doing that now, but they're doing it with personal protective equipment. How can you use your know-how? How can you use your resources to help support law enforcement? And that's really how we got started, by standing up a group of brand owners and partners that went after bad guys who were doing that kind of thing. DHS called it Operation Stolen Promise, where it was highly targeted at those counterfeit and faulty PPE and other equipment. And really, we have evolved our efforts since then and formalized it into what is now today USAIT. So Amy, you asked me what really motivates me. What motivates me is that we were putting a dent in a problem at a time when I think the country was nervous and scared, and government was asking for help. And I'm just really happy that our company and our partner companies answered that call.
When you're looking at the news and reading headlines, do you just see illegal trade coming up every day? Do you just see different topics and different headlines that are directly related to what you're doing?
Yeah, I think you've seen an explosion of this kind of activity, you know, over the past year and a half. And it went from something that maybe wasn't such a sexy crime and wasn't covered so much when you think about counterfeiting, or if you think about people taking smuggling for granted in the past, to where you see the headlines on it almost every day, and no more so than in a state like Illinois, in a city like Chicago, where we have absolutely seen an explosion of organized retail theft, these smash and grab situations that have not only robbed the state of taxpayer money, but also robbed businesses, put people in harm's way. And so I don't take any pride in the fact that we were recognizing this issue a couple of years ago, but But boy, we see it every day now, and glad that we have this organization stood up to try to do our part and fight back. I don't know if Matt has a similar view coming from the law enforcement side.
No, thanks, Kristen. And I would certainly add to what Kristen said. She's obviously exactly right. But I think, you know, from our perspective, and hopefully what people are starting to see and what we're trying to do through USAIT is to try to highlight these links between illicit trade and all these things. So she mentioned organized retail crime. There may be many people thinking that they see that on TV, they see the smash and grabs, and they see the money being lost by the legitimate business people. But where that money goes and how those stolen goods are utilized to further fund these transnational criminal organizations, or to be utilized in trade-based money laundering, or to have those profits go to organizations that are involved in other more nefarious activities involved potentially in terrorism. So, you know, going back to your primary question is what did I see or how did I get involved in this? I mean, I saw these direct links during my career between illicit trade and the money that comes from it and where it goes and what it does and what it funds. And there are really scary links with regard to where this money goes, these transnational criminal organizations, and what it's used for. And whether you're talking about a national security perspective, whether you're talking about a general public safety perspective with regard to allowing these criminal organizations to flourish, allowing them to have the weapons and resources to further enhance their criminal organizations, whether it's to fund the other pieces of their machinery so that they can have smuggling routes which allow them to bring in narcotics or fentanyl or human beings, all those things. And then you start looking at even going broader into counterfeit goods. So Kristen hit on the COVID fraud, and I could go into that for hours, as I was still there when we stood up Stolen Promise, still there with ICE. But you start looking at how are these goods being produced? And then you start getting into child labor and forced labor and exploitation of these individuals that can't speak for themselves and have no functioning government that's going to protect them. So it's not only just the counterfeit PPE that's coming here, that people that are just trying to get things to take care of themselves and their loved ones and their families during a pandemic, but it's also the people that are being victimized on the front end that are producing this material in horrible situations, subhuman conditions, working ungodly numbers of hours. And then you start wondering what they're even putting into this material, and it creates a whole host of safety risks throughout the continuum. So it really is a pervasive issue that kind of touches on all parts within our society. And that's why it's so critical and why we've been so effective in USAIT is we've gotten a really widespread dichotomy of companies and private public entities and partnerships within the private sector that all touch on a lot of various aspects of our day-to-day life in which illicit trade impacts. So that's one of, I think, the benefits and the successes of USAIT.
Yeah, Amy, if I can add to that too, because I certainly don't have stories like Matt has, and maybe some of your listeners, because when I look at my own career, I think, I'm just a, corporate suit, whatever you want to call me. But I also didn't imagine getting into this from the corporate side. I'd ever be working on cases of human smuggling or be working on cases of trade-based money laundering that cartels were using cigarette brands to move instead of moving bulk cash to pay for narcotics. And so in some of those cases, I've been shocked. I don't think your listeners will be shocked, because unfortunately, I think they encounter this in their daily work. And thank God they are on the front lines of that. But even as someone who just works in the private industry, the fact that I was working against a smuggler between that border of upstate New York and Canada, who was smuggling tobacco one way and smuggling in women for $450 a piece back into the United States is just amazing. It's an offensive crime for sure, but so glad that we could be doing our part to try to break down that network, break down that route, because of that human cost that Matt talked about. It's really much more than the product and the money. It's really hitting on some of the worst that humanity has to offer.
I'm curious, is there one story or one case that has really stuck with you or that really illustrates you know, some aspects of what you're dealing with here that stands out?
For me, it was the human smuggling on the northern border case that really sticks out. I think people see a lot that goes on in the Southwest border. They're very focused upon it. It's something that is in the news every night and highly politicized in either direction. Being from upstate New York, a small rural town, you wouldn't think this is where you would encounter something like human trafficking. And so I've told folks this story of, hey, look, it's the route. It's commodity agnostic. The bad guys will smuggle anything they can make money off of. And I've never been so offended to learn that somebody can place a value on a human life and that value is $450. I just, I'm stunned every time I think about it. And I'm just so proud of the small part we played in handing over intelligence to folks working that case in order to bring somebody like that to justice.
And from my perspective, it's kind of hard to parse out one or two cases just because involved in so many. But, you know, you start looking about some of the cases that have been done where you've got direct ties between known designated terrorist organizations receiving money from illicit trade, oftentimes in the tobacco products. But, you know, anything, and when you see how ruthless, whether it's a terrorist organization or whether these criminal transnational organizations, these cartels, they are absolutely ruthless. And as Kristen put with regard to that human trafficking context, unfortunately, that's something that's replicated on a daily basis throughout the world and comes into this country. But it's not limited to this country. And, you know, a lot of the things that we go after from a criminal perspective deals with criminality and these types of crimes in other areas. But, you know, those human beings are looked at by these criminal organizations as being a commodity, just like they are inanimate objects in their mind, just as if it was an illicit cigarette, whether it was a counterfeit NFL jersey, whether it's fake Viagra, whether it's a counterfeit airbag, whether it's fentanyl. They don't care. Those are dollar signs to them. That is all it means. And they could care less the real impact it has on human beings, whether the specific human beings that are being victimized by their activities or the societal costs or the public safety costs or the national security costs that are the result of their criminal activity. So it does take you to a second to take a step back and pause to think that human beings could do that to other human beings. But when you've seen it time and time again, that's why, you know, we're so vehemently aggressively going after these organizations, because they do create havoc and instability. And at the end of the day, victimization around the world.
Yeah, that really helps put into context the type of criminal you're dealing with here and the type of challenge you're up against.
Well, if I could add, I mean, that's the one.
Absolutely.
If I could, that's the one thing we're trying to get across, right? And people think they buy a fake Gucci purse on the street or, you know, a counterfeit NBA or NFL jersey, that it's a victimless crime. It's just some big corporate entity that is, you know, losing a few bucks. They got plenty of dollars to lose. It's no big deal. When in reality, it's the exact opposite. These street level peddlers that are selling these goods are merely the first cog in a huge wheel of criminality that is being funded by these types of criminal activities. So there are real victims. There are real impacts to society from these crimes. They aren't victimless. And that's one of the messages we try to get out there, because sometimes, you know, people do have a tendency to think that it's just no big deal. In reality, it's a huge deal.
Oh, that's a good point.
No, and with organized retail crime, now you're seeing all these stores and, you know, businesses that are losing their money. And again, people that are buying these goods, whether they're buying them through e-commerce or on the street, again, they're just contributing to that cycle of criminality. They're encouraging these organizations to continue to do the smash and grabs and to rob these poor store owners that are just trying to put food on their table and run a business, you know, of their products. So it allows the cycle to perpetuate, which is not good for anybody.
And I think that's right. One of the untold pieces of these smash and grabs is you see some of the images that are caught on security film at times. And sometimes it looks like folks who are healthy and fully cognizant of what they're doing. But more often than not, if you talk to law enforcement, they'll tell you a lot of the individuals involved who go actually in those stores are individuals at risk. They are either homeless, or they are addicted to drugs and they are compelled to do it by really an outside force or a ringleader who sends them in. And so you're, to Matt's point of just sort of perpetuating this misery, they are using those who are most vulnerable to do their dirty work for them, and really shame on them for that.
Sort of shifting gears, our members are, you know, they're local chiefs. They are dealing with their local communities. Can you give some ideas to listeners about what is really the cost for those local communities?
Yeah, no, happy to respond to that, because the idea behind USAIT and getting partners who are not just national brand owners or multinational brand owners like ourselves and Merck and others, who are great to have, but these crimes happen at the local level. They happen at your neighborhood store. They happen in your backyard. And so having the support of the chiefs is such an enormous benefit, an enormous synergy between all of us, because they're the ones that are seeing this impacted. And so to the point of the question, that the toll that it takes, it's not just on lost goods and lost tax revenue. It's also on putting those folks, whether they're the shop owners or workers, in harm's way. It's about then some of these products being fenced through some of these operations that Matt talks about, that really leads to this growing network of gang activity. Certainly the city of Chicago has seen a lot of this. It's something where if they're selling it online, that's bad enough. But if they're selling it on the street corner, now potentially what you're doing is inciting some kind of confrontation between law enforcement officers and people who are on the street selling something or doing something they shouldn't. So it adds an additional element of conflict for that cop on the street. So in my mind, it goes beyond just the dollars and cents, which are high enough, offensive enough, and it goes on to public safety. It goes on to confrontation with law enforcement, which really leads down a path of more significant consequences. But happy to hear from Matt's perspective as former law enforcement.
And Kristen's is spot on with regard to how that impacted. You start talking about public order crimes, right? And just quality of life things. And we've seen, many locations when law enforcement is unable to take action on these public safety crimes or public order crimes, that it emboldens these criminals and these organizations to do more. It's human nature, and especially when you start talking about criminal justice and law enforcement, you know, if illegal activity is rewarded, you're going to get more of it. And so if these organizations are allowed to flourish and are not prosecuted fully and are not brought to justice for their crimes, then it does have a ripple effect throughout that community and the city and society. So, you know, and especially when you're talking about a time right now where law enforcement resources are stretched thin, the amount of resources that a jurisdiction, especially a small jurisdiction, but it happens in large jurisdictions as well. It's hard to hire more people. It takes time. It takes money. The more time that has to be spent in dealing with these types of activities, there's other crimes that aren't being investigated, or there's fewer people that are out on patrol, either walking a beat, getting to know their communities and doing community-oriented policing, and able to respond to things in a more rapid fashion if they're being tied down with dealing with some of these crimes relating to illicit trade, which again, it's a vicious cycle that as more of these crimes are perpetrated, more resources are necessary to try to combat them, and fewer resources are available for other things that I know many officers and departments would like to be doing.
Sort of along that same line, do you have an idea, a ballpark of what illegal trade costs our state monetarily on a annual basis? And then also, you guys have both touched on this, but some of those unseen costs of illegal trade.
Yeah, I can start maybe even just from the perspective of illegal tobacco, because that's the work we work to combat every day. And so for the state of Illinois, annually, the state loses about $135 million alone on just cigarette smuggling. And that's really what people know about. because I often tell people that criminals don't file quarterly reports, right? They're not releasing quarterly earnings statements with extreme accuracy. So we have to estimate what it could potentially be. So you have something, sort of a niche area that is worth that much. You add to it something like organized retail theft writ large, you're talking $4 billion that the state loses every year. And so that becomes real money. That becomes real holes in the budget. That becomes roads that don't get fixed or schools that don't get built. And so I think that becomes sort of linked to what you're saying. It's the monetary aspect of it, but then it's all those downstream effects because you're taking money out of the pockets of either taxpayers or government revenues. And the worst part of all, you're putting it in the pocket of criminals.
It's also victimizing the legitimate businesses in those communities as well, right? Those small businesses that employ many people within those businesses and often employ, you know, some of the younger members of the communities that are looking for their first job, high schoolers or kids right out of college or kids that are working through college, that, you know, if a legitimate business is unable to stay in business because you've got this criminal network or these illicit goods that are undercutting what they're trying to sell at a much reduced price, and whether they're counterfeit goods or whether they're legitimate goods that were stolen through organized retail crime or other methods that are now being sold in the marketplace, whether it's the direct marketplace on the street or in the parking lot of a grocery store or through e-commerce, they're undercutting the legitimate businesses in those areas. And so again, not only do you not have individuals that are able to get jobs and businesses that are trying to survive doing things the right way and paying into the tax base of that community and the country, you know, you're disincentivizing others to try to take that action, create a business, start a business, or go into business or maintain their intellectual property. Because ultimately, if it's not going to be a cost-effective process, why would they do it, right? And that ultimately hurts the communities as a whole.
But give our listeners an idea of how quickly illegal trade is evolving and a sense of if the laws and strategies to fight illegal trade are really keeping up with how quickly it's evolving.
Well, as Krista mentioned, what we saw during COVID, I would say that is a microcosm of the ability and of these criminal organizations to pivot and move in new directions, where you have these factories that are in China or elsewhere in Asia that one week are producing counterfeit Viagra, but are able to change their manufacturing within another week or starting to manufacture PPE or other palliatives that were out there during COVID. And it just shows how nimble they are. There are no bureaucracies within these organizations. There is no OSHA, which is protecting people to make sure that what they're actually buying is legitimate and isn't filled with chemicals or poisons or anything along those lines. And you don't have labor laws and you don't have minimum wages and you don't have all these other things that go into ensuring a legitimate business and legitimate manufacturing is, you know, not only do you have people that are doing it the right way and are doing so in a manner that's safe for the consumer, but they don't have any of these regulations and things that tie them down, which is why they're able to be so nimble, right? I mean, we saw within weeks after the vaccines had been approved for use that there were counterfeit vaccines on the street because these criminal organizations are so nimble and they just pivot to what the new commodity is. If there's a void to be filled, they're going to fill it. So it is a challenge for law enforcement. You know, and I think what you've seen with some of the movement for the organized retail crime laws, like we saw here in Illinois, you know, that's a really good step in the right direction. And that was done fairly rapidly. And so I, you know, commend the state for the legislature there for moving so quickly to try to counteract some of these issues. But it's working with, you know, the state and local jurisdictions and law enforcement to make sure that everybody knows what's being done. Information sharing is critical to make sure that, you know, what you're going to see in law enforcement or what the law enforcement cop on the street is seeing out there in Los Angeles is going to be similar to what they're seeing in Chicago. That's what they're seeing in Dallas, what they're seeing in Miami, right? So keeping those lines of communication open both between the public and the private sectors is critical to help counteract the flexibility of these criminal organizations.
And I think as much as you want to think, or I want to think, that most criminals are just total knuckleheads, I think a lot of these guys, unfortunately, are really smart. And to your point, Amy, about sort of transitioning the MO and going to where they have business opportunity, so to speak, they are incredibly savvy at it. It just stinks they broke bad, because these are folks who otherwise could run a really nice business if they'd actually follow the rules. What they have done, though, is taken advantage. Again, you go back to the example of what they've done during COVID. Matt was talking about the counterfeit vaccines. We were sitting down with DHS about a year ago when the vaccine was first being rolled out. And it was at the time, if you remember, people couldn't get it. Even if you wanted it, you couldn't get it. It was a lot of older folks like my parents who had never been online to go try to buy things. And now all of a sudden they're trying to sign up for the appointment at the right time and have their insurance information transferred over. And so people were taking advantage, especially of folks like senior citizens, like my own parents. We're talking to DHS, though, about this. And they said what they had seen on the dark web is a lot of pop-up sales for empty vials of the COVID vaccine. And you think to yourself, what does somebody want an empty vial of the COVID vaccine for? Well, because bad guys know that it is not illegal to buy an empty vial with nothing in it. But you know that there's malintent there. You know that they're probably going to do something. And that's where the bad guys are smart sometimes, right? They play in that gray area where they know they might be just out of the reach of the law. And then they use that to their advantage to do something even worse. So absolutely, we've seen them transition. And Matt's absolutely right to applaud the Illinois state legislature for being one of the first in the nation to come out with an incredibly tough bill on organized retail crime, supported by the Attorney General, which is fantastic. Bipartisan legislation, also great. When we can come together, boy, what can we get done? And this is really an example of that. In terms of a couple things that it does that if you don't do this every day for a living, you might not think about. One is it breaks down some of the jurisdictional barriers. A lot of criminals get away with their crimes because maybe the crime happens in one place, the seizure's in another place, there's jurisdictional challenges, there's a gray area. And so then it leads to a difficult prosecution or maybe the lack of ability to take it forward. And so that's one of the big pieces in this ORC bill that we've seen is if you do a smash and grab in one county in Illinois and you get caught in another county, either one of those state prosecutors has an ability to bring up those charges. So we think that's fantastic. There was additional resources for law enforcement. I don't need to tell anybody listening to this podcast that there's always a lack of resources for public services, including law enforcement. So there's money for that. And then really the idea of this increased transparency, the increased crackdown on the online fencing element of it. When these smash and grabs really took hold sort of last year around the holiday shopping season, or at least that's when you started hearing about it. A lot of my own friends, if they know what I do for a living, they'd ask me, they're like, I see all these smash and grabs, but I don't see anyone selling them on the corner. How do they unload all this stuff? So guys, they're doing it on the internet. They're potentially doing it when you're not even paying attention. If you're on one of the big marketplace platforms, I won't name any, but if you're on one of those and you're buying deodorant and the price is too good to be true, well, maybe because it came from a big smash and grab at a CVS or Walgreens. And so really trying to go after that changing and evolving marketplace for the illicit goods, trying to crack down on that really is a key element of what Illinois is trying to do. And frankly, again, leading the nation in that. There's only a couple states who have really passed legislation like this. Many state attorneys general who have set up ORC task forces, but yours really being on the front lines of all of this.
And then can you each speak a little bit to some of the resources that USAIT could provide if our police chiefs are really wanting to address illegal trade in their own communities and in the state, what they can do?
From the perspective of private industry, from the perspective of the USAIT coalition, one of the key elements that we've been rolling out is training for law enforcement, training on the MO of how some of these crimes have taken place, training on potentially the angle or hook that you could make a case and potentially get that picked up by a prosecutor. So that's the one piece of it. The other is intelligence and information sharing, because what we see every day is either it relates to our business or some of our partners in other industries, the pharmaceutical industry, apparel industries. We all work with service providers. We all work with private investigators. We are all working on cases that have to do with criminal elements who are either trafficking or counterfeiting our products. But that really is a resource for law enforcement. You always have to verify for sure if it's coming from outside of official law enforcement channels. But boy, doesn't that intelligence hopefully give you a head start on making a case. So that's my view from the private sector. But Matt, please share from your experience.
Sure. And Kristen briefly mentioned it earlier, but I guarantee you, if you go to any police chief or law enforcement leader or any cop on the beat and ask them if their agency or their department or their sheriff's office has enough resources, and the answer is going to be no. And I can tell you from the federal perspective, it's the same thing, even though, you know, there's a perception out there that the federal government is this big, huge behemoth that has all sorts of money. It really is not the case. Which is why there's so much impetus put on task forces and why we try to partner with local agencies as much as possible, because one, we don't have people out there on the street working the beat. Whether it's in a patrol car or on foot, we don't. So those first responders are also the first interdictors or the first arresters or the first identifiers of criminal activity. We generally step in on the back end when there's a federal prosecution or potentially a federal prosecution. But as Kristen mentioned, and I will admit that I was not aware while I was still on the job with regard to just how much of an investment is being made in the private sector to help combat illicit trade. And it's certainly understandable, and it's certainly money well spent. But the amount of intelligence that private industry has that they are more than willing to share with law enforcement to help law enforcement do their job better and to do it smarter is immense. And that's really one of the things we're trying to push through the USAIT initiative, is because information and intelligence is the lifeblood of any law enforcement agency. They need that in order to do their job. And I know we have a lot of law enforcement officers here listening to this, and so I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but that is so critical. But when you start talking about these crimes, especially in areas where illicit trade or perhaps intellectual property type crimes have not really been prosecuted very frequently, it's not only just the identification of the criminal organization and the disruption of that organization, it's putting together a really solid, meaningful case that a prosecutor's office, whether it's at a county level or state level or even federal level, can put together a case that is prosecutable, that has all the evidence readily available, that has statements and affidavits and witness and all the records that go behind a criminal organization, so that they can tie it up in a nice bow and go present it to a U.S. attorney's office or a district attorney's office and get a case that's actually prosecutable. And again, that information that private industry has to help make that case and put that case together is invaluable. And that's one of the things as we go out and do these trainings, and I've done several and Kristen's done several, and we have many more planned throughout this year, is to go out there and make sure that law enforcement knows that these resources are available to them. They're certainly not out there on their own without backing in the private sector. And so that's why we're here, is to try to make sure that they know how to contact us, how to get in touch with us, how to get support and resources when they need it. You know, we want to be that force multiplier for these agencies, because we know they don't have the resources, and sometimes they don't have the expertise or experience in dealing with these things. Well, the private industries that know their brands and know their products better than anybody else, obviously, they do, and they can help. And that's what we're trying to get across.
One additional item, you know, if I could, Amy, building off of what Matt was saying, he and I have spent a long time talking about these issues. And Matt, I'm going to blatantly steal a line from you. He has said in the past, if you're a criminal, would you rather get caught with a truckload of cigarettes or would you rather get caught with a truckload of coke? And think about that. The idea really being that working with, whether it's the tobacco industry or apparel, you can name any of these, it is a lower bar of entry to get into a criminal organization, to understand the network and to really go after the various nodes. Because if somebody is trafficking in drugs, they're potentially going to keep that circle small. They're only going to work and trade with people they really know and trust, who've been a part of the organization. If it's about smuggling cigarettes, they're much more likely to sell to somebody they don't know, to partner with somebody who might be newer to the circle. So we've actually worked to support law enforcement quite often on some undercover cases where they were using cigarettes to infiltrate the organization because it was seen as so low risk for the criminals that they had their defenses down. And so we've done that over the years at the federal and local level to the extent that we've been able to put a dent in some of these drug trafficking organizations. Who maybe allowed some UC agents into the mix. So we've been really proud about that. And so these are the kinds of ideas where people think that cigarette smuggling is sort of a shoulder shrug. You don't really know or care, but that really could be a sort of side door to an organization as well.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, sometimes the smuggling of less valuable goods or ones that don't carry the same criminal penalties as narcotics would be, they're used as probes, right? They're trying, they may be trying a new smuggling route or maybe trying a new individual or group of individuals to move those goods on their behalf to establish trust or whether they want to do business with them with narcotics or other contraband, right? So they'll take something that's less valuable and doesn't have the criminal penalties associated with it. And they'll run those probes. They'll run 2, 3, 4, 5 loads through to see if they get through, to see how these individuals perform, because they know if they get interdicted or they get busted, it's not that big a deal, right? You lose a truckload of cigarettes. Okay. You know, you lost a little bit of money, but it's nothing compared to losing a truckload of cocaine. And people that got popped are going to go to jail for a much longer time. And you have a much greater chance that they're going to flip and provide information to the authority that arrested them with regard to the criminal organization itself, as opposed to somebody that's going to get a slap on the wrist for a truckload of cigarettes. They're not going to flip. They're just going to say, all right, I'll take my hit and move on. And at least this way I'll establish credibility with the criminal organization. So it is used for that as well. And so that's why, again, you know, aggressive prosecution of all these crimes is so essential to the overall enforcement lifecycle.
Absolutely. And you guys have given a lot of good background into sort of for our chiefs to better understand illegal trade. I would love to hear each of you speak a little bit about what you would say to a chief who might want to address this issue in their own community, but might feel overwhelmed or might not know where to start with actually addressing illegal trade.
I mean, I'll start with this one, if you don't mind, just since I got the background. Look, there's a tendency in law enforcement. You have often a lot of Type A personalities, right? Is to be afraid to ask for assistance when you need it, or to be afraid to admit that you maybe don't know everything and how to address every problem that exists. And in reality, I mean, that's what we're here for. Ask questions, reach out to us and try to get assistance. We're working with many departments and sheriffs, either police departments or sheriff's offices directly, but we're also working with the national organizations as well. We work with the National Sheriff's Association. We're trying to get further involved with the International Association of Chiefs of Police. And so to try to address these things from a national level, but we know, and these chiefs that are on this call and the law enforcement leaders know that these things happen locally, and that's where the rubber meets the road. And so that's why we want to make sure that we're a direct available resource to them. So reach out to us through our website. We have all the contact information available on there. And that's what we're here. Don't be afraid to ask questions. Don't be afraid to, admit there's things that you don't know or that you need help, because that's why we're here. That's why these private entities are spending hundreds of millions of dollars a year on enforcement branches and compliance branches and private investigators, because it is so critical to their business and they want to share this information with you. It doesn't do anybody any good to take all that information, collect it, collate it, and stick it in the filing cabinet, right? Unless that information is usable and actionable and gets to the hands of the individuals that can actually implement, then you know it is somewhat of a wasted effort. So private industry really does need law enforcement to help them with this process. And law enforcement certainly can benefit from the expertise and knowledge that private industry has. So this is really a good symbiotic relationship. As Krista mentioned, the law that was passed in Illinois has bipartisan support. I don't think you're going to find pushback anywhere to go after these criminal organizations and the crimes that they're committing. So this is a place where there seems to be agreement throughout. So let's leverage that and be as effective as possible.
I also just think too, the 100% agree with everything that Matt says from the private industry perspective. I would reiterate, you know, the idea that we sit on a lot of data, which to us is trade data, or it's us understanding our business or the marketplace. To law enforcement, like, these are clues and it's evidence. And so reaching out to us for that, that's exactly what we're here for. Matt's right. Maybe the idea that you don't always know who to call at a big multinational company or who's the right person to talk to, but especially as it relates to Illinois, I mean, there's tremendous resources with those in the business community right now, such as folks like the Illinois Retail Merchants Association, who played a very large part in supporting the Attorney General and supporting this ORC legislation. Folks like that, I mean, they understand and they know what's going on with the retailers on the ground. And that's also a place to start if you're law enforcement, to be talking with some of those local business owners, business associations, because they see and feel what's going on every day. They may give you more of an earful than folks may want, but you're going to get the unvarnished situation from them as well. So talking with them, talking about the problems that they are seeing either in their shops or in their supply chain with some of their distributors. And then of course, you know, reaching out to us for anything we can do to help. And really USAIT being an organization that trying to break down those silos, those barriers between different companies and industries, but then also really trying to enhance that cooperation between public and private.
Right. And those, obviously, the listeners to this that are in Illinois, having the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police as part of USAIT is a huge benefit, right? So you've got direct window through the ILACP, you know, who is a member that can get right to where you need to get to and help you out in that process. So, again, Illinois is ahead of some of the other states that are out there that are also facing similar challenges. So I commend them for that. And it's great that the ILACP forward leaning in working with USAIT.
Great. And for our listeners who are wanting to learn more about USAIT or connect with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, I think first stop is probably just the website, www.usait.org. All the information is there, whether it's national data and resources or specific to Illinois. Each state has its own resource page, list of the partnerships that we have there, and contact information to get in touch with us through that channel.
Great. Is there anything else you guys wanted to touch on or anything else that you wanted to share with our listener?
I would just, again, really commend the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police, the legislature, as well as, Kristen, you mentioned a bunch of the partners that we have within the state. And I think, you know, looking at that list, it's probably as long as, if not longer than most other states in the union. So Illinois really is on the front line of helping their communities in this area and taking an aggressive, holistic approach at trying to combat these crimes and recognizing the profound impact they have on society, again, both at a local level and even at a national and international level. So I really commend them for their forward leaning and thinking on this process. I hope we get a chance to work with them more. I really do hope this leads to some greater interaction and let USAIT help you and be a force multiplier for you so that you can do the police work and we can do some of the grunt work for you, because we know you don't have enough resources out there. You know, we appreciate what you and your officers are out there every day do. We know the challenges that are out there, both the traditional challenges that exist in society and trying to enforce laws, especially against individuals against whom they don't want the law enforced. But also with some of the societal and political things that are out there right now, it's a very challenging time. So we really do appreciate and respect what you were doing on an every single day basis. And we just want to help you any way we can. So please don't hesitate to reach out. It would be our pleasure and distinct honor to be able to help you guys any way we could. So thank you.
I can't say that any better than Matt did, especially with his 26 years of service plus in law enforcement. You know, it comes from a place where he knows he gets it. He wore the badge and knows the job. From the corporate side of this, I can only just have tremendous admiration for everything law enforcement does, whether it's the Illinois Association of Chiefs of Police or the Sheriff's Association, who we also work with, partners at every level, whether it's federal, state, or local. So much admiration for everything they're doing to keep our community safe. And it's not an easy job, as I've learned. It's an incredibly tough job and long hours, and not always the thanks or respect that you should get, but you should know that you have it from USAIT. You have it from all of these partners. We are honored that you are a partner with us. And like Matt said, the offer of support is always there. So please let us know what we can do to help.
Thank you both so much for being on today. I really appreciate it.